Hello and welcome to the Multiverse of Marketing. I am Crash and Burn, and with me as always is J.R. Sweeney.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to my nation's sickness. Every nation has its own problems. This is a part of mine.
Okay. Explain to me, like I'm five, what the point of this is, because here's the thing. So generally speaking, when you do a miniseries, and let's be clear, this is a miniseries. Each issue has a different name because fuck you if you try to read it in order.
Yeah.
But it is a miniseries. It is a five-issue miniseries. The first two issues are Don't Do Drugs, which, okay.
Pretty straightforward.
The third issue is Don't Run Over Kids, which, yeah. The fourth issue, I'm not really sure. Like, it introduces a superhero we never see again who's in a wheelchair. Which in theory I'm on board with, but in practice winds up becoming, it has a tendency to go from hooray for empowerment to justify your existence.
And so it's Canadian. Okay, cool.
And then the fifth issue is just like completely unconnected.
The message of the fourth issue was bike safety.
Where? The Wright writers show up.
Yeah.
The Wright writers from the third issue. Okay, whatever. We'll get to that.
And then the fifth issue is you should appreciate the Montreal Expos while you still have them.
I don't think anyone's buying that. So, all right. So let's get into this. I mean, overall, the point of it all seems to be, what if Spider-Man, but Canada? And
yeah.
So this
is a weird series because it wasn't envisioned as being, first of all, a mini series, let alone five issues. Originally, it was supposed to be three, and it was not released. It wasn't like for sale. It wasn't like you could go to a store.
Have we actually said what the name is?
First of all, there is no real name to it. Technically, it gets sold under a trade paperback as Skating on Thin Ice, which is the name of the first story and the kind of overtitle to the subtitle of the second story, but then they drop that shit because there ain't no more ice.
Right.
We're done with ice.
Well, I'm sorry for talking over you, but I felt like we should get that out of the way real quick.
No, you're absolutely right. The fact that this has no overarching name, even in Canada, we don't have a name for it. Yeah, it's a really unique book. This is in terms of like marketing products, things that were made on contract. This is kind of unique. There was, of course, a lot of stuff like this in the States, but because this included a bunch of like intentionally Canadian messages and locations, it's a more unique take on it. And there's a couple of contexts to it that make it kind of hilarious in hindsight beyond its face value hilariousness. So this initially was a couple of comics, three comics that were released like one a year, beginning in, I believe, 1991. If I recall, possibly 1992. And I remember getting these in schools. They handed them out. Like every class got a pile of them. And you would get one whenever your school got around to the lesson of the issue. And there, I remember the Wright Riders setting up obstacle courses and giving out all the stickers that you see the kids wearing in the comic book. And the comic book was meant to like reinforce the use of those like arm signals and putting on reflective stuff on your helmet and bike and all that kind of nonsense. And this is a series that I managed to collect with the exception of Skating on Thin Ice Double Trouble. I have all of these. I still have all of these issues because they were just given to us. And when school gives you a Spider-Man comic, you don't question it. When the Blue Jays won the World Series in 1992 and we got cake, we did not question it. This is the way of Canada. When one of us achieves something, all of us achieve something. And finally, we had achieved
fucking
Spider-Man.
Socialism, I swear to God.
I will say,
you know, it's weird. It's weird how hard it is to find these,
mm-hmm.
given that, by and large, like the first three issues are written by Dwayne McDuffie, and the fourth issue is written by Scott Lobdell. And I realize Scott Lobdell has issues now, but they've both gone on to be big names in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
So it's weird that you can't find these even as a curiosity half the time.
Right? Like the cover of the very first issue is a McFarlane.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand if he's holding it up for some damn reason, but like, why aren't they slapping that on the cover of a Simple Trade and throwing it out there and being like, here's the anti-drug Canada issues. Remember how wacky those were? Technically, it's a story. And yeah. Before we get any further, I want to talk about very briefly a funny thing that happened to the production of this. So this was produced by the the Canadian Association of Chiefs of Police at the Alliance for a Drug-Free Canada, which was a federal body, Wright Riders Bicycle and Road Safety Program, and a couple of minor other organizations. The Alliance for a Drug-Free Canada does not exist anymore. Neither, I believe, do the Wright Riders. And the Canadian Association of Chief of Police support decriminalization and legalization.
Well, the Wright Riders, I tried to look up because a lot of the stuff in this was way too specific.
Oh, it's very specific. It is tied directly to a set of lessons that they would take you out of school in like grade one. And that's your entire day. You bring your bike to school and you go through these paces. And
what
the
if
book
you rode
reinforces
a bus?
It. I rode the bus and they would allow you, this is the early 90s, to take your bike on the bus. Because there was only like five of us on this entire fucking school bus.
Well, that makes a difference.
It's Canada. You'd understand it.
Okay. So anyway.
So Peter Parker is fighting Electro. And Electro is smuggling hockey pucks. This fucked with me for years, by the way. I played hockey, and there is a stitch on the top of hockey pucks, like cheap hockey pucks, where it's just pressed together. Mm-hmm. And for years, every time I saw that stitch, I went, oh, that's got drugs in it.
Mm.
Because he is smuggling them in, like, I don't know what kind of hockey pucks these are that you can just, like, unscrew the cap and there's pills inside. I didn't understand that was pills for the longest time either. I had no idea what drugs looked like.
You know, I grew up under Reagan and like the Just Say No and like Dare and all of the paranoia around like everybody's going to offer you drugs everywhere you go. And so my modus operandi was to assume drugs were in everything.
Yeah.
You know, if I saw something at all irregular, I was just like, there's fucking drugs in that. And my friends would be like, what the fuck are you talking about? And I'd just be like, someone is smuggling drugs inside that kid's Ninja Turtle. And they're like, no, it's just one of the ones with the back, the shell that opens. And I'm like, for drugs.
Yeah, how fucking convenient.
It was a weird time, is what I'm saying.
It was a weird, like, in the States, you got Dare. In Canada, we got this. So, like,
I'd say you came out ahead, honestly. Yeah.
We got some sweet comic books out of it with Spider-Man in it. Well, Spider-Man went to Fredericton.
Let's not oversell it.
Spider-Man went to the fucking Fredericton. You know who goes to Fredericton? No one.
There you
anyway,
go.
Anyway, so Spidey finds the puck drugs that Electro is helping to smuggle, and they're coming from Winnipeg. Because, fuck Winnipeg. I have family who live in Winnipeg, and it's a very, everything is made of the same kind of, like, quarry rock, or, like, like concrete, and it gets dull in the winter, and it snows forever. It is flat, it is dull and concrete, and it's the weirdest place on earth. And I live on the East Coast. I have, like, aside from a couple of years around the country and in the kind of the middle of the country, I have lived on the East Coast. I was born on the East Coast. I need water. I need motherfucking coast. And being in Winnipeg is just like, my soul is trying to escape.
What I will say is, whatever issues this whole storyline may have, one thing that they fucking nailed is how low rent Electro is. Like, he has all this power, and his whole thing is just like, I'm gonna smuggle drugs. And it's just like, really, man? You control one of the fundamental forces out there, you know, like, electromagnetism is a big thing. Like, you could be doing so much more. And he's just like, nah, I'm just going to sell some drugs to a kid. And you're just like, I mean, you know, your role. Like, I'm not saying, like, good job, pleb, don't aim above your station. But, like, you know, some people know, like, you know, I'm not real smart. I'm not a great planner. I'm not going to be Dr. Fucking Doom. That's okay. I'm fine doing low rent bullshit. You want a knockoff handbag? I will use my electrical powers, my mastery of electricity to get you a shitty handbag. And that's great.
I just like how there is a polar opposite in, like, gravitas when it comes to electromagnetic powers, that you've got, like, Magneto shifting the very, like, magnetic forces of Earth and, you know, like, causing global chaos. Yeah. And being, like, really monarchistic about it, like, regal as shit. And then on the other hand, you've got Electro, like, hey, kid, you want to buy some drugs? And it's like, why'd you shock me, man? Sorry, I can't help it. But hey, drugs?
Yeah, it's just like, you know, Magneto is quite literally holding the world for hostage, and Electro's just like, you want to buy a Rolex? That says Volex. Why? It's a real thing. It's a misprint. It's cool, man. It's the same thing. It's just they accidentally fucked it up and they can't sell it. Anyway, so Winnipeg.
That was more interesting to talk about than Winnipeg.
I assume most things are.
Yes, quite.
I'm sorry, Canada.
Don't be. So, Peter manages to swindle J. Jonah Jameson into sending him on a to-be-extended trip to Canada, basically just bullshitting his way through coverage, because apparently J. Joe was like, you should go to Canada. And Peter was like, no. And then this happened. And he's like, you know what? I'll take you up on that, JJ. And JJ is like, the fuck?
You know, whatever. I am here anytime Peter wants to scam rich people. Sure. Mm. Go for it, man.
Mm. Yeah.
Do more. Yeah. Take more.
Just, anyway. Just keep adding on to it, and then we'll eventually get to that wonderful story arc in She-Hulk where they sue each other.
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
Yeah. So he goes to Canada, and he meets these youth Pee Wee Hockey League kids, and like
Pee Wee Hockey League kids who, depending on depiction, either are 6 or 16.
I mean, you know, who can say, really? Time is just a number, you know, or age is just a number, you know, like, fucking, you are how old you feel at any given time or whatever. And that's why age of consent. No. I'm kidding. I am not going there.
A child does like openly drink beer and smoke the cigarettes just like super fucking casually. Like I love how casual they are, because they're just like off to the side and like popping brewskis and lighting up cigarettes. And it's like, yeah, no, that's Winnipeg.
Yeah. And they have this guy who's coaching them, who I guess was a real hockey player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Herb Carnegie. He was like, oddly enough, Canada has a like long history of, black hockey players, mm-hmm. Herb Carnegie, PK Subban, a bunch with, Montreal. And they have this like pantheon status of hockey heroes in this country. And so like, having Herb Carnegie in the Congress, let me just put it this way. I was 6 years old. I knew more about Herb Carnegie than I did Spider-Man.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas, so, you know,
very strange.
Like I went through a period where I liked hockey, but I didn't get far enough into it to, you know, get super into the backstory, I guess you could say, the canon. You know, so yeah, I have no idea. But yeah, so he's teaching these kids hockey, and also weirdly in the next issue driving them to science fairs
in Fredericton, which is about 1,200 kilometers, if not 1,500 kilometers, like 1,000 miles.
Sure.
Yeah.
See, and I mean, not to insult a national treasure here. Here I was when we were talking about him, I thought you were about to be like, and then he like went down the Jimmy Savile route, and it's just like, this is gonna all turn very dark very quickly.
No, the darkest thing that occurs in this is a bittersweet farewell to the Expos.
Okay. Bless well, you. It's just, you know, it is weird that, like, of all of the people who could take these kids to this thing, it's just like, yeah, part-time hockey coach, sure.
Yeah, like, no, totally. Going to the science fair, you know, the science fair. In Canada, you know, the Canadian Science Fair, that fair, in Fredericton.
Yeah, and...
Wait, you couldn't fucking afford the Crystal Palace in Moncton? God!
I laugh, but I have no idea.
It'd be happy you don't.
So he swings around and he's like, don't do drugs, kids. And he takes out Electro. But then, I don't know. I don't care. I'm sorry. Like, This is so all over the place.
The second issue is absolutely the weakest because it's actually trying to like complete a plot, and we're not here for plot. We are here for lessons and hammy fucking like straight down the camera. Hey kids, don't. And actually, it's funny that throughout all of this, Peter at no point says don't do drugs. He's just like, make wise decisions.
Yeah.
It's like, all I can picture sometimes is like, a middle-aged, middle-class mother swinging away going, make good choices.
Well, or it's so vague. I prefer to think that Peter's just like, look, you're going to get high. That's fine. Just make sure you clear your schedule before you do it. Like, don't go to work high. Don't be driving high. Okay. You know, like we all like to kind of check out for a little while, and that's fine.
I deal with the Green Goblin, the Hobgoblin, Mysterio. I can't even begin to tell you what the hell like Kraven puts in those darts. I'm high most of the time, and I swing around New York. Damage that could be done.
But yeah, and like the second issue is the science fair.
Yeah,
and apparently this kid has a science fair project that's so amazing, someone hired the chameleon to steal it. And what I want more than anything, I kept wanting it to just be like a baking soda volcano.
Yes. Yes. Like, yeah, I always want him to be low rent as fuck. Like, high-powered assassin, always dressing to the nines, and yeah, stealing two dozen cakes, and that's just awful.
Yeah, like he steals this girl's notebook because of all her highfalutin science, and it's just like, yeah, you mix the baking soda and the vinegar and like some food coloring and it's lava, and he's like, yes, I will get much money for this.
Just he tries to sell it to Fisk and he just gets slapped, like full on hand pump slap. Just
yeah.
Wham.
And then yeah, so here again, the whole thing is don't do drugs because this other kid is just like popping pills left and right, and even compared to the first issue, this one's really weak.
Yes. Like, yeah.
It's secondary.
This is such a thin plot. It's a two issue plot. It simply like stumbling to a conclusion once it's already done its message after it's spent its seed. It makes complete sense because it's like, let's just get the fuck out of here. Listen, I don't want Logan to catch wind that I was in Canada, because I'll never fucking hear the end of it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And the third issue, I think, is my favorite, because... because
it's badass.
Well, here's the thing. So, Danny Ketch is in Canada for reasons.
Reasons.
And, you know, Ghost Rider reasons. And a kid gets hit that it turns out is his nephew, which bad luck for you, bro.
Yeah. That's just so Canadian. Your Canadian cousin, that's the one who gets hit by a car. Why? There's one car in Canada. When Herb is not using it, this drunk asshole is.
Well, and I think my luck is such that I would just not commit any sort of crimes, not just crimes, but I would just go out of my way to be the nicest person, because God forbid you accidentally hurt or injure or otherwise offend someone, and it turns out that's the person who's like second cousin is the Hulk, and the next thing you know, you're some green thing is just plowing through your house. But so this guy hits this kid, and we've got all this stuff about the Wright Riders, which cool, mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Like you're going to be on a bike, be safe, whatever. But the weird thing in all of this is we have the standard, you know, Spider-Man and Ghost Rider are on the same side, but they come to blows because blah, 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 who cares? But in the course of all of this, we get my favorite moment, which is Ghost Rider tells a bunch of kids to wear their helmets and he threatens them with like his penance stare if they don't. And it's just like, Jesus fucking Christ, Danny, that's a little bit of overkill. Like,
Yeah, but you want to know a really fascinating fucked up thing?
what?
So every time I put on a helmet when biking as a kid, I would think of that issue because, like, first of all, this is the early 90s and Ghost Rider is fucking the tits. You know, it's
Yeah.
so awesome. And he appears in something like this and it was free. I got in school. Ghost Rider, are you kidding me? It was just fucking awesome. But more importantly, when I was about 15 or so, I saw my friend get fucking plowed by a car while he was on a bike. Like he's fine. Half his face turned to leather, like fucking Two-Face. But he's fine now. It kind of got better. But literally, what first went through my head, aside from like shock, was Ghost Rider pointing at a kid, just being like, "Wear your goddamn helmet."
I mean, seriously, this guy is out here using this power to reduce grown men who are like pimps and drug dealers and serial killers and just the absolute worst people to tears. And then at the same time, he's just like, wear a helmet or I'll fuck you up. And it's just like, come on, man. Why? You can give them good advice without threatening their immortal soul over it.
He's not great
But
with kids, okay?
I mean, as much as these books care about like the innocent, like those kids lost their innocence that day.
Oh, no. I would actually like to assert they lost their innocence before then because there is a secret tie-in, and I tried my best to find a digital copy of this, but it doesn't seem to exist. It seems that people have tried to wipe it from the internet aside from a couple of basic images.
Whatever for.
Whoa, let me explain. So as you may have noticed, the kid in this is a Blue Jays fan.
Oh.
And the Blue Jays, a couple of Blue Jays appear in this, along with the mute mascot Jay. I think his name was Jay. Anyway, at the time
Some of that
in,
Canadian creativity.
oh yes, oh just you fucking wait, just you fucking wait. At the time, there was a big push in Canada to get like kids really into the Blue Jays, and especially around this time when they won the World Series twice. Sorry, Expos, you just can't fucking like you can't compete with that. And this was like the hottest time the Blue Jays ever had. There were literal albums released about the Blue Jays
Awesome.
winning the World Series. It's a whole thing. And at the time, it
Full
cor
Super Bowl shuffle.
Yeah, exactly. And at the time, the Jays were big into these kinds of like programs, you know, like help kids, teach them important lessons, stuff like that. And as a part of the contract that involved them in this, through things like the Right Riders Association and all that, there is a secondary program that got government funding, and it was called the Junior Jays. Have you ever heard of the Junior Jays?
Why would you assume I had?
Oh no, that it's probably for the best. And it was a basic like fandom thing, but it was really pushed hard in schools. And the reason why it was pushed hard in schools is when you became a member of the Junior Jays, you got a free comic book every month. It was in like a digest form. And so there would be a couple of comic book stories in that and a couple of like lessons about, you know, like treating respecting nature, cultures in Canada, anti-drug things.
That is what Canada does best, from what I've heard, is respecting cultures.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, it's great. It's, you know, like this is the kind of Canada that Canada wants to be. And so, you know, it would have all the kinds of things that you'd hope kids would know, at least you'd hope Canadian kids would know. But the comics themselves were set around, and the membership was set around, this idea that 82,000 years from now, a super intelligent robot who kind of looks like Einstein steals or invents a not TARDIS and goes back in time, and when they crash, the first thing they encounter, a la Transformers and vehicles or dinosaurs, is the Blue Jays. And so the TARDIS gets a giant Blue Jays cap, and he transforms into what looks like a very skinny Einstein dressed in a Blue Jays manager uniform. So the full blue baseball uniform and then the blue blazer windbreaker over it. And he adventures through time and space with young Canadians, teaching them about whatever the fuck the primary lesson is, and while also fighting like a vague nefarious empire in the future.
And then it goes all Jimmy Savile.
Yeah, right? At some point, I'm sure that somewhere involved went Jimmy Savile. But that's, I wanted so much to show you a full issue of this, because it's so blatant. Someone went, hey, what if we made Doctor Who for the Blue Jays?
That sounds amazing. Wow.
Yeah, and so that was funded through the same program as these books. All of this was free to the consumer.
Right. Okay. So yeah. The third issue, the kid survives, the guy gets the pen and stare and is just like, I'm sorry. And everybody, and Ghost Rider and Spider-Man are just like, well, see you later or whatever. See you the next time the new Fantastic Four gets together.
Spidey doesn't need to be in this issue. He really is superfluous to it. And like, I don't even think they have. I mean, I think he's like, I'm going to go cover the Jays. And J. Jonah's like, I guess. Fuck sure. It. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, we have exhausted the original purpose of all of this. And they're now just looking for any reason, which is why the next issue is about a rodeo.
Yeah, and that's very true, because again, this was supposed to be three issues. It ends with like the Jays funded and backed one, which has a little bit better art, let me just say. But the next issue comes out, I believe, the year later, and the next two issues exist purely because the first three were such a success.
Okay.
So they are completely fucking bullshit thrown together.
Well, and that's the thing, because here again, like, there doesn't really seem to be much of a moral. It's just, so, first of all, we have Texas Twister and Shooting Star at a rodeo. And if you're not familiar, Texas Twister is a character who is able to create twisters and be from Texas. And Shooting Star has the power of being a Nepo baby. Because, and I mean that literally, because her origin is her dad bought her special guns. That's it. And so they're doing a thing at a rodeo.
It's the Calgary Stampede, if I recall.
Cool.
Yeah.
I've heard about that, but only because of a Kyle Kinane joke. So,
yeah, pretty much.
They're at this, and like, Peter is sitting with a scientist and his daughter when the Frightful Four attack. And so I want to talk about this. I support the idea of of empowering people with disabilities, empowering people to, you know, yeah, great. But the way a lot of this comes across is very, are you familiar with the YouTuber Sean?
I've heard of.
Okay. He has a great video about Harry Potter. Okay. And in that, like, he gets into, like, a lot of the issues with the Harry Potter series and J.K. Rowling's neoliberal worldview. And one of the things he brings up is the way that J.K. Rowling views bigotry. In that, you know, in Harry Potter, when bigotry comes up, like when they talk about, well, Malfoy is against people who were born of muggles or what have you, and blah, blah, blah. But he's wrong, of course, because Hermione was born in a muggle family and she's amazing. And Neville is a pureblood and he sucks. And the idea is that bigotry is wrong because it's incorrect. And that, you know, it fails to understand that someone like Malfoy considers even a shitty pureblood wizard like Neville Longbottom to be worth 10 of someone like Hermione simply by virtue of the fact that he's a pureblood. And the implication of all of this is, yeah, but Malfoy's wrong. Look at all the stuff you can do. But if you couldn't do that, then he would be totally right to hate you. Yeah, and yeah. That is the way. That's why representation in comics and other things is a very fine line to walk. Because so many of them sort of dip into that, I'm in a wheelchair, but look at all the amazing things I can do. And it's just like, yeah, but it's enough that you're a human being, you know? Yeah. And that's the way this kind of comes across, is like, I am in a wheelchair, but I'm able to overcome that. And it's like, this is, what are you doing?
It's frankly because it comes from the same time. It comes from that same neoliberal perspective. Yeah. And at the time, it was considered progressive to just be like, oh, this one's really awesome, though. It kind of like how the kid in the wheelchair in the Burger King Kids Club was also like super techie.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, no, he couldn't just be there. No, he has to be like a cyborg.
Well, of course, this is the sort of thing that continues to, I mean, my daughter watches the Robert Rodriguez came out with a superhero kids movie. That takes place in the same universe as Shark Boy and Lava Girl. Sorry. In fact, Shark Boy and Lava Girl are all grown up and have a kid in this one. And in that, there's a kid who's in a wheelchair and he's like, I bet you think it's because my legs aren't strong enough, but in fact, it's that they're too strong. And actually, like, I just have, my bones aren't able to handle how strong my legs are. And it's like, that's weird. It could just be a kid who's in a wheelchair. Like, why do you have to make it all weird?
Yeah.
By doing that, you're overcorrecting and implying that the validity of someone in a wheelchair or with a disability is based on their ability to overcome it and not their innate humanity.
Yeah.
And that's very much how this issue is. And also, yeah, the Frightful Four suck and Shooting Star is a Nepo baby.
And this is so those are entirely valid issues that are probably, like, let's put those at number one. Those are the number one issues that this comic has, where it's just like, she's super awesome and she has a rocket chair. Fuck yeah. Mm-hmm. issue two, though, is this is definitely the most Albertan issue ever. It says a lot about them because, as you say, it's kind of meaningless, aside from maybe like respect people with disabilities, sort of. Of right. all these issues, it's the one
because
that
they
has...
may be a superhero and yeah. for no other reason.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
But yeah, it's of all these issues, it's kind of the most like lost one. And it feels so just like forced in there of like, and Alberta's here too. And it's like, okay, Alberta, what have you got to show us? Do you have a athletes or anything? And it's like, no, but we've got these Texans. And it's like, ah, yes, the great Albertan, the great Albertan Napoleon complex in which you all wish that you were actually Texans. Ridiculous province. Full on ridiculous province. And so the fact that like a villain group and a superhero group who are not at all from Alberta, they're Americans, show up and do battle at the Calgary Stampede is like, that would make Calgarians cream themselves. I swear to God, I can hear Stephen Harper go, he's a former prime minister from Calgary for people who have no, yeah. He was a fascist. Anyway.
Thank you. I, you know, as an American, I know absolutely nothing about other countries. So it helps to provide context like that, because otherwise I might have to learn it myself and like, ew.
Well, there is a terrific run of Alpha Flight from the last couple of years of Stephen Harper, in which he more or less tries to use them as a personal corruption weapon. Mm-hmm. And it's very overt that it's like, that's Stephen Harper. He's a dick.
Is that the Captain Canuck run or whatever? When...
Ooh, I believe so.
It was like mid-2000s.
Yeah, probably a little bit later.
There was barely anybody from... like Alpha Flight proper. It was mostly just like random other Canadian heroes.
Pretty much. So yeah, this issue, the spirit is understandable, but also well off the mark and horribly dated.
My favorite thing is, so like I said, there's a Kyle Kinane joke about Calgary. He tells this whole story about getting kicked out of Calgary because he had a DUI, and he'd been in Canada since getting the DUI, and he's like, and you know, DUI, it's stupid, it's bad. I'm fortunate in that I didn't hurt anybody, and you shouldn't drink and drive. And he's like, but I'd had the DUI. I went to Canada a few times, and I got to Calgary, and on the outside they were having a rodeo, and they'd painted the whole windows of the airport to be the rodeo. You know, the windows, which are usually the thing you want to see the new place you've come to. And they're like, yeah, you're not missing much. There's a rodeo going on. And he gets to the counter and hands them his passport, and they're just like, okay, well, we're sending you back. And he's like, why? And they're like, well, you know, it shows there that you had a DUI, and we here in Calgary, we frown on that sort of thing. So we're sending you back to the United States. And he's like, but I've been here since then. I've been to Toronto, and I've been to, you know, Winnipeg and all these other places. And the lady was just like, yeah. Well, this is Calgary. And he's like, yeah, you're the shittiest one.
Mm-hmm. That's true. It's not even Edmonton. I mean, Edmonton's better. If you find yourself in Alberta, just head north. Go to Edmonton, sweet fuck.
Yeah. So, yeah, we have a rodeo one. And then our last one is a baseball game.
Mm-hmm. I feel like this one is it's kind of an apology for any frustrations it might have had previously, and also a semi-celebration run, because the lesson in this is more or less Norman Osborn or Harry Osborn has deep-seated father and parental issues.
Which I don't know if you knew that, having ever read Spider-Man, that Harry Osborn has issues with fatherhood.
So yeah, this one, again, this comes like months later. And so in the canon of Spider-Man, he, you know, like the time he left chasing Electro keeps getting pushed further and further. And so this right. was approaching, I believe, Amazing Spider-Man 500, something like that. And it's the super special issue when Norman comes back and reveals, like, it was me all along, Austin. It's a great issue because it's just full on 90s nonsense of like, I'm not dead. Ah, ha, ha, ha. And
the
he
whole
is a
clone
far
saga
character.
Was me. Ha ha.
Okay, will you buy that? Well, is that a good explanation? Can we stop doing the clone saga, please? God. But at the time, Harry was going through some issues and he had a child named Normie, little Normie, and little Normie was not safe around him. And so Mary Jane and Peter, who were married at this time, more or less like took custody of him and were raising him. And every now and then Harry would walk around New York and see Mary Jane and Normie and have a complete mental breakdown right there on the pavement.
Like you do.
As you do.
It is nice that they finally allowed Normie to reach the cusp of puberty recently. I've felt terrible that he, like every other child, has been allowed to grow up to some degree. Mm. And Normie is still just like, scrop. And like,
because they know inevitably, it's like, listen, we got to get this kid on a goblin glider or kill him. There's only two options.
He's sitting there like, 40 years old. And I've never so much as touched a woman.
Just him and Aunt May passing age back and forth to each other, like in fucking Life Force.
Well, yeah, it's like somewhere in the Osborn attic, there's a portrait of Normie that is an adult and not a virgin anymore. And he hates that motherfucking thing so much. Just like... Oh man.
He's the kid from Passions.
That wasn't a was that a kid or I thought that was a haunted like leaf doll or something.
I don't fucking know.
No, that was no, that thing was full of leaves. Like it was like sewn and shit. It was like Sally from Nightmare Before Christmas. Why do I know that? I've seen so little of that show, but that I know?
Oh my gosh.
We're off the rails.
Anyway, sorry. So because MJ is...
I do have a few more things to say about Normie's balls, but...
So because MJ is, of course, a celebrity, when she shows up at the Jays game, fan appreciation day that, again, Parker is, or not the Jays game, the Expos game, again, Parker has been managed to swindle not only another ticket out of JJ, but now MJ's there as well and probably calling in room service all the goddamn time. She's,
yeah,
it's fucking MJ. Of course,
well,
she is.
But she's a model. She can afford it. Peter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. But that shit's getting charged to the Daily Bugle. Thank you.
For sure.
This is the early 90s, and he is a traveling photographer for a major newspaper. They can still fucking afford it.
Yeah. He'll take like a single photo of her in front of the dugout and expense all of it.
There was a battle with Spider-Man. Oh, I fucking hate that guy. Did you get photos? No, sorry. Here's my wife. I'll take that.
I can't, which sucks because I try to sell my vacation photos and no one wants them but like the weird dude at the bus station.
Who oddly also is named JJ.
Yeah, but not J. Jonah Jameson. It's more anyway, like John John, and he's got like a scar on his forehead. I don't know. I'm going in weird directions right now.
It just says 316 there, and you don't want to ask why.
Anyway,
so yeah, Harry sees this on a television and has a complete final breakdown and decides to goblin up and fly to Montreal from New York on a goblin glider. Just going to say that, like.
That is, let's see. How far is that? That is 372 miles, which
as
is.
As the goblin flies.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So 372 miles in kilometers is 598.6 kilometers.
Incredible thigh muscles. My God, to be squatting that whole time. Incredible.
Yeah. Well, do you think it has like a mode where he can kind of sit for a little while or something? I mean, It's one thing in short bursts, but like it to do that, because this says it's like several hours if you're flying straight there. I'm sorry, like even with a goblin serum, that's gotta be rough. Like,
oh yeah.
By the time he gets there, he's gonna like step off that thing and immediately collapse because his leg muscles are just like, nope, can't do it anymore.
Do you think he like he got there and like took a breather hovering around the city or something? So, you know, like, yeah, piss off the side of it, do a couple of, like, you know, just have a seat, stretch your legs, and then it was like, all right, on to Spider-Man.
Things like that are so, I mean, it is so weird to think. I recognize that I overthink these things, but hi, I'm a nerd. It's what we do. We overthink stuff and we bully women on the internet. But the idea of just, you know, Harry and Norman at any given time that they're not engaged in high-level negotiations or goblining are just sitting there with a thigh master just working away. Like, gotta stay trim. That glider is unforgiving. You think you nail leg day? No, you have got nothing on me.
Oh, God. Just, you can that's how Parker really notices, like, you know, that Norman and Harry are the Green Goblin. It's like, look at the fucking size of their thighs. Jesus Christ. The only person I know, like, oh my God.
Who is the character Famke Janssen played in Bond that was like thigh killing everybody?
Zina on a top.
There we go. On a top. God. I think my favorite thing about the Bond franchise is the subtlety. If that became the Goblin's like signature move, just, you know, oh yeah, I have the bombs and I have like the bat stuff and I've got the glider with all the knives on it. But if it gets really up close and personal, I'm going to crack their head like a walnut.
I'm just trying to imagine like the awkwardness of like he finally nails Parker and Parker's like, all right, Norman, get off me. And he just starts squeezing and making eye contact.
Oh, that's the worst part. Just Norman just sitting there boring a hole in your skull. Like,
and just getting tighter and tighter. Ah!
Yeah. I'm sorry.
I'm turned on now. I can.
Oh my god. Yeah. Anyway, the Montreal Expos beat the fucking shit out of Harry.
You know, should have done the thigh attack.
And then he flies home on a beaten to shit glider again, 500 kilometers, except this time going putt, 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 putt. And I just can't help if like the Canadian military saw my radar and was like, there he goes, fucking off back home. Should we launch a missile up his ass? Why?
No, no. Let him go.
He's learned his lesson.
I think maybe, you know, he'll come out of this a better person.
Yeah. I think he's never going to touch drugs, and he always signals when he comes up to an intersection.
Just on the goblin glider throwing up like the making a left turn.
That's how it is. That's absolutely how it should have ended. Like, the completion of this entire saga is he goes up to, like, the stop sign. It's like, ah!
Helmet with the stickers on it.
Flies past some kids doing a drug deal. Like, hey, no! Piss off!
I'll be back for you! Oh, my God.
And yeah, some point, I guess Peter gets home and files some bullshit with JJ.
Honestly, like, out of all the scenes in this book, out of all the weird meandering things that this series did, that's the one I actually want to see that bit. Like, let me see Peter try to turn in the receipts and the photos for all of this to Jonah. And just be like, I'd like to be reimbursed, please. And Jonah's just like, get the fuck out of my office.
And yeah, he just walks right out the Daily Bugle front door, straight into issue 500, and Norman beating the fucking shit out of him.
Sure. Why not?
Perfect. Happy anniversary, Spider-Man.
Happy anniversary. He's gonna crush your head.
canon ending. New canon ending.
There we go. Yeah. If I ever get a chance to write Green Goblin, that's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna have him just like leg lock somebody and just, you know. I mean, even if it's not the head, even if it's around the waist, like he just gets his legs around them and squeezes and they like get bisected or something. Like,
yeah, yeah. And like, because Norman's so far gone, so twisted, there's nothing sexual about it, but it should all be vaguely sexual. It's just, no,
everything
no,
is sexual about it. Everything is sexual about it. Like, that's the thing. Not only is he going to do that, not only is he going to stare at them the entire time, but he's going to have just the erection, which in that costume, you know, everybody's going to be able to see it, no problem. It's just going to be like, everybody is going to be sitting there going, holy shit, the Green Goblin is packing, and he's into it. What is, you know,
to the surprise of no New Yorker, I am sure.
Spider-Man goes to fight him and is just like, you know what? No. This one he gets. This is a win for him.
I'll see you later, Norman. And you can tell which ones. You can tell which one's Norman and Harry because Harry doesn't measure up.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, shit, that's Norman. Whoa.
Norman's is like a baby arm, and Harry's average. Like, you know, nothing spectacular. It's not anything to be ashamed of necessarily, but clearly he did not get those genes.
he got the hair and nothing else.
He got the hair. He got the crazy, but he did not. He did not luck out, which, you know, that's just unfair. You know, if you've got to deal with all the other shit, the least you should do is get the giant cock.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope they start drawing him like Kendall Roy going forward.
Sure, why not? I haven't seen Succession.
It's perfect.
I'm terrible. Yeah. I know. Yada yada yada. Whatever. Nah,
like, just think that, like, reimagine them as the Osborne clan, and it's like, yeah, yeah. Fat Brian Cox on a goblin glider, great thighs,
with an enormous erection. yeah.
Well, I think that takes us to the end of that episode.
I just, you know, the major thing is like, I don't know. I live in the U.S. and it's just like, yeah, I know rich people suck. Why? Yeah, I know. Anyway. All right. So.
That was a good. Yeah, that was fun.
on that high note, if for some reason you want to listen to more of this, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, you know, email us at multiversomarketing@gmail.com. You know, send us your fan art of of Norman and Harry with just giant obvious erections
and massive thighs.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Do it. What is the internet for, if not that? I ask you.